Case is 2016-1054, Blue Spike versus Google. Mr. Anderson, please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes of rebuttal time. So may it please the court, as you know, my name is Kirk Anderson. I represent the appellant in this case, Blue Spike LLC. This is a case of patent eligibility under Section 101 that the Northern District of California granted the appellee's motion for judgment on the pleadings, arguing and holding that the patents in suit are invalid as being abstract and patent ineligible. Blue Spike appealed, and now Blue Spike asks the court to reverse and remand that decision. There are three main issues that I plan on discussing today, and those are that prong one of the Mayo Alice test.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure, Your Honor.
How did the claimed inventions reduce signals to technological content or detail about how to implement them?
I'm sorry, how did they reduce?
How do they reduce signals about human perceptions? The claimed inventions reduce signals to abstract so human perceptions are retained. How do they do that in technological content or detail?
Yes, Your Honor. So
you have what you call a verbal algorithm.
Right. Yes, Your Honor. I believe that is the answer to your question is on Appendix 69, which is part of the 175 patent, and specifically listed there in column 4, lines 18 through 32, and column.
I'm sorry, what page?
69. That's Appendix 69, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. This is the front page of the 175 patent.
Yeah.
I apologize, Your Honor. It's column 12, 10 through 12. Columns 10 through 12 are probably what you're looking for. And you'll notice there, Your Honors, that there are a number of specific algorithms that are mentioned by the patents in suit. It mentions linear predictive coding, Z-transform analysis, root mean square, frequency-weighted RMS, signal-to-peak, and spectral transforms, all of which are designed to identify these perceptual characteristics in a signal. And so the patent, yes, has an exemplary algorithm that spans multiple columns describing how the invention is implemented in general. And to your question, those are the specific algorithms on which it relies to find the perceptual characteristics of a given signal. And so, Your Honor, that is a good point to start at, because the patent in suit then does describe a very specific improvement over the prior art, and does describe a very specific way of comparing digital signals. These digital signals are data reduced. They are based on perceptual characteristics, and they use an abstract or a representation to represent the original signal itself. We're not talking about the general use of computer technology here to compare signals. These are improvements, for example, over, say, comparing two files on a one-to-one basis, looking at them and finding out what is different. Rather, they are teaching the use of this separate representation that is very specifically defined. And that is an improvement over what computers could inherently do in the first place, which is very important. It's what this court described in EnFish as an improvement in the computer's capabilities.
I just don't derive that from, for example, column 11 in its description of cognitive identification, and it has words in it, but as a novel feature to the present invention, additional class may be subject to humanly perceptible observation. But then you really, what you do is you say, okay, for example, a 3-second burst of a song, but it doesn't say how.
You're saying, Your Honor, that it doesn't say how to produce the abstract using mm-hmm. perceptual characteristics?
It doesn't tell me what the invention is.
So, Your Honor, the invention, if you look at column 8, so beginning there on line 14, we have the first element is a reference database. So now I'm pointing out the general, the exemplary algorithm. So we have a reference database. The second element is that object locator that finds the part of the digital signal that will be assessed. The third element is that feature selector, and that's what you pointed out. That's what you're focusing on. And then, as I was describing in columns 10 and 11, the patent describes a number of algorithms that can be used to find those perceptual characteristics. And what's important here is that although those algorithms can be used to find perceptual characteristics, what is inventive here is that they are used in this novel way of finding perceptual characteristics within this digital signal, extracting those, putting those into a separate representation, the digital abstract, and then using that for comparison. And, Your Honor, I believe it does. The mere fact that it lists these algorithms that can be used to find the perceptual characteristics is enough for one of ordinary skill in the art to be able to rely on those and implement those in creating the abstract.
Just by way of some background, just tell me if this is completely irrelevant. The priority date here postdates the creation, probably even marketing and patenting of MP3 compression. Is that right?
I believe that's right, Your Honor.
Which, at least if I'm recalling right, is a form of compressing, that is, data-reduced representations so that you can get a lot more into the same amount of memory, and basically the listener won't care about the difference, preserving perceptual characteristics.
You're right, Your Honor, and I believe the patent actually describes this type of compression. So compression was certainly already in the prior art. But there are many differences between the MP3 and the digital abstract.
Why would that not be an example of something that satisfies the claim language?
I believe, Your Honor, because mere compression is looking for mathematical, looking in mathematical ways to represent a big file in a smaller manner, just generally.
And right, the reason I picked MP3 is that the point was to compress and do it so that you, let's use a claim phrase here, preserve or retain perceptual characteristics. That's kind of the whole point. You don't want it to sound like a different song.
That's right, Your Honor. What's important here, though, as the patent describes, is that you're reducing it to the point where you're trying to find the smallest way of representing that original file. This actually speaks to the idea.
Do we have a claim here that talks about the smallest way? I thought that the abstract is an accepted claim construction that just borrowed maybe from another case, saying a data-reduced representation that retains a perceptual relationship. It doesn't have to be the smallest,
true,
the best.
I'm pulling from the specification. It says that the intent is to reduce to, ideally, maybe even one bit that would represent the differences, but that's not a part of the actual claim construction on the term per abstract.
But isn't that what we have to focus on? That is, we have, even if, and I don't know this, whether this is true or not, even if in the spec somewhere there was a very specific way of compressing that was, let's say, novel, not obvious, not conventional, all the things that it shouldn't be in order to try to get a patent on it. If that's not in the claims, then that's not going to do you any good.
Your Honor, I believe it still at least it gives us well, let me say this as well. I want to answer your other question about the MP3, but quickly just to speak to that, that's another issue that Bluespike brought up here, is that because this was a motion granted on the pleadings, that the Northern District of California didn't have the opportunity to go through and do the claim construction. And so, yes, it was borrowed from the other courts, but it...
And did you ask the court to address the 101 on the basis of that claim construction?
Yes, Your Honor. It was at the very least, Your Honor. Yes,
okay.
But Bluespike still believes that that was prejudicial to Bluespike because that was an undeveloped record, that the court didn't have the benefit of having come to those conclusions itself. But I'd like to answer your question at least briefly on the MP3. So that an MP3, when it is compressed, again, it retains the perceptual characteristics, but it doesn't. It is not created based on those perceptual characteristics. It is merely reduced in size. Whereas what we're talking about here is the patents in suit are actually locating perceptual characteristics and creating the representation based on that.
It's not clear to me that the claim construction that retains perceptual characteristics builds in a purpose criterion for the way in which the abstract is being created, as opposed to the result of the abstract still having something about the perceptual characteristics. And not even all of them, just some of them perhaps.
At the very least, Your Honor, I think it is built in the sense that what most of these claims are talking about is comparison between abstracts. And so what you have, if you have two MP3s, or if you have an MP3 and you're comparing it to the original signal, it's not developed in such a way that allows you to have a greater ability to compare the two, if that makes sense. The purpose of the invention is to create an abstract that's the smaller representation that facilitates a greater ability to compare. And so if you were comparing an MP3 to another MP3, you'd be comparing it one-to-one. If you were comparing an MP3 to to the original file, I'm not sure how you'd compare that. At least I'm not sure how a computer would compare that. So that actually illustrates, I believe, one of the novelties of this invention, that it's looking at how can we train a computer to do what maybe a human could do, but that a computer is not innately designed to do.
One of your arguments at page 7 of your blue brief is you say the resulting signal abstract is non-invertible, meaning that it can't, I'm quoting, cannot be used to recreate the original digital signal. Was that argued below? Because I didn't find it in the record.
Your Honor, I don't believe that it was, and I noted that in Appelli's brief as well. It is something that comes from the specification. My answer to that would be something that, given claim construction in the Northern District of California, that Bluespike would have raised. But because it was imported from the Eastern District of Texas, it was not specifically in the claim construction of the term abstract.
You're well into your rebuttal time. Would you like to save the remaining time?
I would, Your Honor. Thank
Very
you.
Very good. Mr. Berta, please proceed.
Thank you. May it please the Court. The question, I think there are harder 101 questions and then there are easier 101 questions. Here, I think this is well on one side of the boundary that has been established, especially by a lot of this Court's recent decisions, on what is the difference between something that is an abstract idea and something that is a specific computer improvement. The issue here is when you go to the exemplary claim that the District Court looked at, which is claim one of the 472 patent, all that it says is that you have a signal.
Is it agreed, by the way, by everybody that the case stands or falls on that exemplary claim, or is that disputed?
It is not agreed, Your Honor, and the District Court went through all of the elements of all of the claims on that basis. And I guess when I used the word exemplary, I probably should have used the word sample. But if you go to the appellant papers, they only address one or two elements on a couple of claims. So by and large, having not addressed or pointed out particularly any basis on which additional claims add something inventive, this Court has said before in certain cases that you can then assume that it to be representative, and indeed the Court can make the decision that it is representative, regardless of whether the parties agree. But going back to it, what I will say is the sample claim, the 472 claim 1, it matches what most of the other claims claim, which is the idea of an abstract. And in the claim itself, it says that the abstract has to retain perceptual qualities. And then it says, using a processor, and then you store it in a database, and then you do another abstract on another signal, and you compare. And so when you look at what...
And there's no further specification of how the comparison is done, just compare?
You use a comparing device. Other than that, there's no specification, certainly not in the claims, and also not in the specification itself, if one were to go to the specification to find a further limitation. And so, too, with the issue of what it is the abstract is, what it says is create one, and the claim claims the result of the creation of an abstract, which is the result being something that retains a perceptual quality, which the specification confirms is something that is humanly perceptible. And the Texas claim construction the plaintiff asked for the Court to adopt finds to be perceptible means perceived by a human. And so restating the claim in full is you pull out an abstract, something intrinsic to the work, that is what a human would perceive from the work, but on a computer with a processor.
Yeah, but that's a really, really important difference. I didn't understand in your brief when you were going on and on about humans' perceptibility. This isn't a case where you're just taking something a human can do and stick it on a computer. This is a case with algorithms, precise and different, varied algorithms on how to extrapolate from a digital file characteristics that a human would perceive. The fact that ultimately, at the end of the day, a human perceives it doesn't morph this into either a mental process on the one hand or some sort of, oh, this is just a human could do this in their head. It just happens to be done on a computer here. This is the very technical manner of trying to reduce a file into an abstract which will retain humanly perceptible qualities. That is very technical. And so I really didn't understand in your brief when you kept focusing on the human perceptibility as though this encapsulated a mental process, as though the computer were an irrelevant, insignificant post-solution addition to this problem. I don't understand at all argument as
yes,
you've
Your
made
Honor,
it. So maybe you can explain it to
I
me.
I hope so. That I think the point there is not, well, it's the question to be asked is something an abstract idea? And when you look at whether something is an abstract idea, you go to what the claim is claiming. And what the claim claims is to extract something from the work that is human perceptible. And it's not, by its terms, that sounds like an abstract idea because it says it is doing on a computer what a human would do. It may well be wildly complicated, the actual implementation of how one does it. But what this Court's recent decisions have made clear is what's key in EnFISH and all these other cases is that the claim actually lays out the specifics of how you do it. And that when you do not have the specifics of how one is supposed to abstract something from a work and retain human perception, that you then are laying claim to the entire idea without something concrete within the specification that limits it to something less than the abstract idea.
Well, doesn't the specification here give you the concrete things in column 10, or does it not? That's what your opposing counsel pointed us to, and I think it would be fair to say using a computer to abstract perceptual qualities of a reference into the abstract, and then it would be reasonable for us to look at the specification to understand the technological manner in which that is achieved. The technological manner doesn't have to be laid out in detail in the specific in the claim itself, does it?
Why would it?
For example, if the technological manner is to employ, for example, a root mean square algorithm, why would utilizing abstract retain a perceptual relationship to the reference signal by utilizing a root mean square algorithm? I mean, what would that add to the claim that would suddenly take it? If your argument is correct, I don't see how these very technical and detailed manner of potentially achieving the claimed result, if these were incorporated into the claim, I don't think I understand how your argument would work. I mean,
so the issue in the specification is what the specification lays out with some level of detail is not a method to accomplish the result, but many, many, many conventional things that exist that result in a something that is smaller than the signal itself that retains something really perceptible from the signal. So read fairly, the specification says you can use, and this is in column 4, you can use MP3, you can use JPEG, you can use MPEG. There's many, many conventional tools that exist that have the effect of the end result being some perceptual relationship to the original. Our invention is you use those, you use root mean square, you use a spectral transform, you use anything you want as long as you get to the result of something that is perceptual that you can then call an abstract.
So if we were to bring this back to Alice, your argument would be they don't articulate any means of achieving this claimed result other than conventional means of achieving it, and therefore there is no technological innovation addition. I'm focusing on step 2 of Alice.
Right. So
is that how I would understand your argument?
Yes, Your Honor, in the sense that there's two issues. The first is what is the claim claiming? And this is where I want to sort of draw a distinction between something like enablement and something like a 101. Are these claims enabled? I don't know. As you point out, there's just a lot of stuff in the specification about all sorts of different ways in which one could do something. But the key is that the claims are not limited to any one of those ways. And all of the ways that are described in the specification are by reference to existing technology of others. And so there's two issues as to why this is abstract and then unlimited, because there's nothing to point to in the claim that makes it narrower than just the general idea. And I believe that's the point of Alice, is that when there's not a way, a specific way to do something, or it's not limited to something that you can then draw a distinction from in the prior art, that what you're just laying claim to is the abstract idea. And so when you go through the limitations of the claim itself, there is nothing else to find in that claim to make it narrower than the idea.
But that's still element one.
Well,
Alice,
yeah,
except the first prong of Alice. I mean, I guess I was trying to get you to focus on the second prong of Alice.
Right, but I think that the second prong of Alice, at least in my understanding, is to go to the rest of the claim and see if there's anything else there other than the bare claim to the abstract idea. And when you say, when you look at the claim language, it says it's a processor, and it says it uses a database, and those have been, I believe, fairly accepted to be not anything other than conventional computer tools used in their ordinary capacity.
See, I think the problem is you're fighting me on a view of Alice that you don't need in order to win your case and that I don't agree with. So I'm just going to lay it out very clearly for you so you can back away and still potentially win. So I guess the problem I have with what you're saying is you're suggesting that the perceptual relationship portion of the claim is no longer relevant when you get to step 2 of Alice. And I don't see how that's true if the specification had in fact disclosed a novel or non-obvious manner of synthesizing the perceptual characteristics. And so you're fighting a battle you don't need to win in order to win the case, I think, and may not ever win with me. It's not the way I view Alice.
Fair enough, Your Honor. And I think I misunderstood. So I think there's two issues. One is is what is there in the claim. And then the further point is, even if one were to look at the specification, if there was something laid out that was a specific issue, does that add something inventive to the claim itself? And I agree with you that on that basis, when you go back to the specification, there is nothing in the specification other than an extensive listing of various prior art standard conventional tools that it calls standard conventional compression tools and says use them for the purpose that they were intended for, to accomplish our invention. And so if you look at it from that perspective, still nothing in the specification by its own terms adds something inventive to the claim, to the claimed invention. I absolutely
So all the stuff that he pointed us to in claim 10, to summarize what I think your argument is, in column 10 spanning column 11 of the patent, maybe various algorithms that would allow one to create the abstract that would retain perceptive characteristics, but all of those algorithms are conventional. And there's nothing in this patent that has described a non-conventional technological advance that's added to this claim.
The non-conventional technological advance would be to say, this is how you do it. And that's now what I was trying to say, your opposing counsel, isn't there.
That's correct, Your Honor. I think it lays out a bunch of conventional options and says any of them would work. I think by its terms in column 7, where it says that the analogy can be made clear if it's understood that there are a large number of approaches to compression, and then goes on to say just use the ones that retain human perceptibility, and that's the point, is it claims... Not to fight Your Honor on this, but I think it's the two points. One is there's nothing in the specification that one can point to that is new, and two, there is nothing, and this is my understanding of this court's decisions in cases like Enfish, and cases that find something to be patentable, like MCRO, that you've got to it. That one thing that would be helpful is if you go to the claim itself, the claim actually limits itself to a particular way to accomplish the result. And I agree, if one were to go to the specification to import a way, there's still nothing to be imported that is anything other than there's a lot of conventional tools out there. Some of them retain human perception. Use those. So there's nothing inventive that is required or limited by the claims, and there's nothing inventive that is set forth in the specification that's anything other than use the prior art for its intended purpose.
I understand your argument. Do you have anything extra that you want to add? Anything else further?
No.
Okay,
no.
Mr. Berta, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have a little bit of rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to just address this point that Your Honor just brought up and point the court to the Bascom Global v. AT&T case that said that the case here, in that case, an inventive concept can be found in a non-conventional and non-generic arrangement of known conventional pieces. So I don't think that it's problematic that the patents in suit list all of these various ways of accomplishing the creation of the abstract. It is the arrangement of those and the other pieces within the claim that creates the novelty here and the actual invention. So if anything, the patent listing more methods of producing that abstract only strengthens it. I'll just quickly speak to preemption. We're not talking about comparing one thing to another. We are talking about creating this data representation that is, an improvement on the prior art of watermarks, table of contents, index, or other kinds of markers that could identify what a digital signal is.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Mr. Anderson, I just want to say one thing.
Please.
I use these briefs and the whole exercise as a teaching tool for my clerks as well. And without addressing the merits in the slightest, I want you to know that I wrote across the front of the brief, excellent brief, so that the clerks would take a look at it just for how it was done.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor.
And it was a really good job.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, I thank both counsel for their arguments.